If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This has been a wacky week, but it's also going to be a wacky podcast for Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. We're almost through February, Ian.
Yeah, we are.
He's also a Ferguson, and I'm a country of Pat, and we are in Castle Country. Someone out there said they hated it when I say that. It ain't going to stop anytime soon. We got a lot of stuff lined up. We got a lot of stuff lined up to talk about. We're not going to be discussing Black Panther. We did that as an exclusive, so you missed that. You got to watch it on YouTube. But we'll be talking about legislation to tax M-rated games. That sounds like a great idea. The ESRB responding to loot boxes and in-game sales. A long-lost Donkey Kong game. Atari with another bad idea. Metal Gear Survive charges. Another week.
Konami with more bad ideas.
Chrono Trigger on Steam. Patreon Q&A, the first Irritable Ian rant will be coming up as well. Ian, what's been going on? Has your week been as terrible as mine the past 7 days?
I'm not going to turn it into a pissing contest. My week's been a pretty decent mixture of up and down.
All right, mine was worse.
I'll let you have the worst week. Mine overall ended up pretty good. The bad news is that my abs have been particularly shitty again lately.
Well, we have something that we ordered something to help cure that, though.
Yeah, and I got it yesterday.
Not a ball stretcher.
Well, we don't know if it's going to cure it, and we're not sure what's going to happen, but I'm excited to try it because it will be good for my back one way or another.
Sure.
But we did order an inversion table for me.
We ordered it together like we were like planning a wedding.
It was cute. And it arrived, but I have not put it together yet. It showed up yesterday.
See, here's the thing about Pat that people don't realize. They think I'm just a cold-hearted, asshole, which I am at times, but sometimes I care about people and I try to help them out.
Yeah,
magnanimously.
The adverb. Pat will never admit this, but I think I'm one of the people Pat cares about the most.
Well, let's not get nuts.
Yeah. Anyways, so other than that, Vani and I had a really nice day off yesterday. Went and finally bought her bow. Got her a nice bow.
Bo Dallas.
Yeah, Bo Dallas. Yeah,
Nerf bow and arrow.
Bobo.
A real one.
Yeah, a real one. And she's like super excited. She's already looked at like the ranges. She's probably going to go shoot tomorrow. And
that's awesome. Olympics 2020. Here we come.
She's been wanting to get back into it for like 15 years, and she's super stoked. She went out, got her arrows.
How did she get into it? Like
through
day,
high school.
High school had it?
Through high school.
Okay.
In Mexico. Or was it up here? Might have even been up here.
Never heard of archery in high school.
But I used to shoot too, just through like scouts and stuff like that. And because
you were a Boy Scout?
Cub. Weeblow. Up through Weeblows.
Weeblows?
Yes.
Not Weebo.
We be loyal scouts. That was the in
between.
Speaking
of that, I just bought my Girl Scout cookies, the unhealthiest shit in the planet. But I love the Girl Scouts.
I can't fuck. I got to find some.
In any supermarket.
Yeah.
They have a s'mores cookie now. Which
fucking A.
It's like candy. So I usually buy four. I get four boxes for $20. You got to do the Samoas.
I get like two tag-alongs. Samoas, tagalongs, and...
I don't do Thin Mints.
I pass Thin Mints.
I'm not a big fan of. I can eat.
I like them.
They're overrated. They're not the best.
I like them, but you can get a reasonable analog year round in the Keebler grasshoppers.
If you want to go that route, even though they do taste a little different. But I like the shortbread, the OG.
Yeah.
The OG cookie, the shortbread with the little Girl Scout.
Those are great.
Those are fantastic.
And so are the lemon creams.
Not a fan of the lemon ones. Mm. A little too sugary. Okay. A little bit too on the diabetes side for me on those. It's all, you don't need the extra powder sugar, in my opinion, on those. In my opinion. I know it's controversial. Let us know in the comments what your favorite Girl Scout cookie is. That's a fucking asshole. You should like the lemon.
I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of crap for saying we don't do Thin Mints. So.
But that's like the hack
I know.
Answer.
I know.
Answer.
It is.
Oh, you could freeze them. Did you know that?
Oh, no, I didn't. circling back around real quick. But I used to shoot too through my grandparents' hunt club.
At a hunting club?
It was called the Alabama Hunt Club in Buffalo, New York. But it was a shooting range. Anyways, so after getting Vonnie all this stuff and seeing her get excited, I was like, maybe I want to go back to archery. So I was like, well, if she stays into it for about, 6 months, I was like, I'm probably going to pick up a bow as well.
Oh.
It was fun.
What did they cost, like $100 for a decent one?
About $150 for a decent recurve.
Okay.
A recurve is a style.
Not a composite bow.
No, I have no interest in composite. Yeah, neither does she.
800 pounds of draw strength.
Hunting is not the end result here. Just target shooting.
So speaking of arrows, there was a great article about Brendan Fraser and what he's been up to.
Oh.
And it's pretty harrowing about, he was a pretty nice guy that got chewed up a little bit by Hollywood, and there was a Me Too thing where he was sexually assaulted by someone.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of made him feel bad about that, and that combined with him not landing the Superman Returns role back in like 2000,
right.
2003, I think they originally doing it, he was up for it, and he felt worthless because he didn't get that part. So like a combination of factors made him step away, and plus there was a few movies he didn't make a good choice in doing some of those movies that he probably shouldn't have done.
Yeah, but makes like every movie fun.
Yeah, he's the nicest guy. Like in the article, concerns like he's like the fucking nicest guy.
My friend Jess loves Brendan Fraser. Like collects his DVDs.
So people were all getting on a sign that they said they want like the, what do they call it, set of Renaissance, like Fraserance or whatever they're trying to say. Like because he's now starring in these series again, and he's getting back out there in like in small roles, and he's only like 47 or so.
Yeah, he's not an old dude.
Yeah, because when he was big in the mid-90s, he was only like 25.
Yeah,
at the time.
He was young.
And he was the biggest movie star on the planet. People forget for like a few years. He was gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of the biggest ones. But one of the things is that he gets interviewed on, I guess he has like a ranch or a farm, and he gets frustrated about something. He says, I got to let some arrows fly. And he literally gets a leather... with the quills, what's the holder for the arrows? I don't know. Quill holder, whatever. But
quiver.
It's a quiver. Quills, quiver. He goes outside and he hits two arrow bullseye like 75 yards. Boom, boom. He's like, I feel better. He was frustrated with like, and then the Me Too thing comes out later after that. And that was kind of unfortunate to hear that it affected him like that. And that, it's fucked with many people's careers, but Brendan Fraser, it's like one of the guys you wouldn't expect that to happen to like that.
That's sad.
And so about people, nice fucking guy. Hell, whenever Airheads is on, I have to watch some of it at least. And that movie's pretty fucking bad, but there's a charm to it with all the different characters.
There is, yes.
But it's a bad movie on its surface. You don't want to see that movie, unless you're like, okay, I'm in for some weird treat. Speaking of movies, Ian. How did we not know it was the 30th anniversary of Bloodsport?
I did.
How did my Bloodsport badge going to be ripped off my chest in disgrace?
I do have to say though, I only knew because
February
Jean-Claude Van Damme announced it.
He did.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a director's cut?
No, he just said it was yesterday. It's not like I knew that.
How do I not follow him on Twitter? That's a shame.
That is problematic.
That is problematic. That works for Pat. It's problematic. We had a conversation before about how I'm problematic. So Ian and I love Bloodsport, and I should have made this its own topic. We still have never had a Bloodsport topic, really, but the brilliance of that movie. But just it made Van Damme a huge star. It wasn't his first movie, but his third movie. He had Black Eagle before that, and of course he had No Retreat, No Surrender, and then he had a minor role in like fucking Electric.
He had an uncredited role in Breaking 2.
Turn off your screen, Xavier. Oh God! But anyway, so why is Bloodsport so great? Let me count the ways. It was a mainstay in terms of.
That'll stop as soon as we load.
It was a mainstay on TBS for years and years. It was shown a lot.
Sure was.
Also, I think it may even TNT. And it was one of those first violent movies you saw on TV as a child. And it was fun.
Yeah.
It was absolutely fun. And I remember being shocked to see, like, then they cut out. They cut it out within a few years, but you see, like, the guy get kneed in the face and his blood. And it's really an extremely overachieving movie for what it is. It should not have been as good as it was.
No.
On paper. And behind the scenes, Van Damme had a lot to do with that. He helped re-edit the movie into something. He basically helped salvage the movie.
It's probably the best depiction of a martial arts tournament. Yeah, I mean, one of the better ones. It tries to show the behind the scenes aspects of it, which is not
lots
exactly
of different fighters and styles.
And they let that play out in a longer form way than most.
You get to learn about other fighters and even kind of root for different fighters. You know who's going to end up in the end. But there's even side characters that show up. And I showed Ian the script, which I'm sure he's seen. But I'm sure he's read it for the 30. No, he didn't read it yet. But even in the script, they did a good job establishing the different fighter types in the movie. Like, you know, the one guy, like the sumo guy, and you have the Brazilian fighter, Paradis, who's in real life is Van Damme's friend.
Yeah, Paco.
Paco's another one.
I was just going to say, I'm just naming him.
Paco was fucking awesome. I saw Paco in a random movie one time. I went nuts.
I love Paco.
A Muay Thai fighter, and you didn't see that or know about that, especially in the late 80s. And it's just a great, obviously you have Jackson's character, played by, what's his name from Revenge of the Nerds? And I should have the IMDb in front of me, and I don't.
He's dead.
What?
That guy died. Jackson.
He died?
Yeah, Jackson's dead.
Are you serious?
Almost positive.
No, Ian, come on. Really?
Look it up, man.
I'm going to look it up. I'm looking up right now. And, of course, you have the great Forrest Whitaker in a pivotal role.
I love Forrest Whitaker.
And this is Whitaker coming off of, like, Good Morning Vietnam and Platoon, by the way. You know, so it's like he's doing all these heavy movies, and then he does Bloodsport at the same time just to get paid. Maybe he was hanging out after Platoon was finished. And he's like, oh, I'll just go up and just film it in Hong Kong real quick or wherever they actually filmed it. It's bizarre.
What I love about Forrest Whitaker.
Donald Gibb.
Yeah. What I love about
is still alive.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank heavens.
He's 64. Oh. He's 64.
Sure. All right. Well, he's not.
What are you going to say about Bloodsport?
Before
we go off the rails here.
Can't remember.
Roy Chow was Senzo Tanaka, who, if you've seen Japanese movies like Tora, 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 he's in that and a bunch of other ones.
Mr. Lin is fantastic as their handler.
Kensu is Mr. Lin. I'm Lin.
I'm Lin.
Yeah, Lin's the best.
You Jackson? You look like a Jackson.
So go fucking read the script, because there's a lot more with Duke's training and being friends with the Japanese kid. There's a lot more.
Yeah.
There's a lot more. So you can tell how they had to cut it down and trim it down and make it make sense.
Okay.
That there's a lot more about the ninjutsu stuff.
That's where you said the majority of the bulk of differences is, right?
The first like 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway. So yeah, go watch Bloodsport. Here's the 30th anniversary. I want to see a director's cut or something. I want to see Van Damme do a commentary track. I don't think he's ever done a commentary track. On the DVD's a bare bones one, I believe, even.
Yeah.
So.
I really should have listened to the soundtrack.
Oh, you can. It's online. You can get it.
Oh, I've got the German release of the vinyl soundtrack.
With the real Kumite, not the redone one.
Yeah,
got the real original Kumite.
Yes, it's got the real one.
One of the most overachieving scores of a film I think I've seen.
It's a great score.
For a cheesy 80s B-level Canon Films martial arts movie. It's almost near amazing score.
On my own.
Well, that's the soundtrack, but the score.
The score's great too.
The score is fantastic.
The best thing about the soundtrack is that it has like the score and the actual songs on it too. Like it's got both.
Sure. So here's the Bloodsport. Deserved to make more money than Black Panther. By the way, Black Panther, we did an impromptu video recording, so we're not including it with this audio podcast. So if you listen to the audio version, go on YouTube, type in CU Podcast Black Panther, and we have a 40-minute conversation about it, 43 minutes. We went a little long on that.
43, really?
It was a lot.
I felt like that was like
Civil half. War was like 20 something minutes. We talked about that.
Yeah, Black Panther deserved it.
It did. So, all right, we have legislation being proposed to tax M-rated video games.
Right.
And this is in the wake of a bunch of school shootings, the last one being Parkland, Florida, where it was a 17.
People. 17 dead, 15 injured.
So, unfortunate. Very unfortunate. So, this is coming out of Rhode Island. This state representative, Bobby Nardolillo, announced legislation to call for a tax on games rated M or higher, which would be only be, what, adults only, right? A 10% tax to increase mental health.
What do you mean, adults only?
That's above M. There's rated M, then there's adults only. That, yeah.
Rated M or higher, right? Yeah. But I mean, you can't.
So that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
So there's a 10% tax being proposed, and it would go towards mental health and counseling resources in schools. Tax would be an additional amount added to the sale of video games sold in Rhode Island with specified ratings. So Nardolillo said there is evidence that children exposed to violent video games at a young age tend to act more aggressively than those who are not. He said in a news release, this bill would give schools the additional resources needed to help students deal with that aggression in a positive way. He said he believes the measure could be helpful in restricting access to violent video games, since states cannot outright ban the sale of games to minors. Our goal is to make every school in Rhode Island a safe and calm place for students to learn. By offering children resources to manage their aggression today, we can ensure a more peaceful tomorrow. The Providence Journal reports that Nardolillo received $1,000 in 2017 from a pro-gun rights Rhode Island-based group.
No shit.
He's also seeking the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate against Robert Flanders. The winner will take on incumbent Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse. All right, Ian.
So here's my take on it, I guess.
Okay.
There is evidence. No, there isn't. I mean, that's been largely proven over time.
Well, there's no evidence linking violent acts themselves
to violent video games.
I've seen some stuff about aggressive behavior. I have seen that.
Right.
About violent media stoking aggressive behavior, but not violence itself. And I think that's important to keep that in mind.
Correct.
Absolutely.
I still think this is an example of passing the buck on the more pressing issues, such as gun control and things like that. I don't have an issue. The thing is he makes great point. There's points. I would love to see programs that help children deal with aggression and mental health issues and stuff like that. That's all great because that's really not tackled properly with teenagers. And I think that would help a lot of these issues. Like, this is all good stuff that we need to cover, but you don't need to tax video games to do it. This is looking for a scapegoat and looking for an easy way to do it. How about instead of taking $1,000 from a pro-gun lobby, we use that money to go towards these sorts of things? I just feel like that there's other ways you can get this sort of money.
Well, it's always easy to try to remedy something that doesn't affect you or your campaign or something that's actually a hotbed issue. You know, going back to the 90s when they try to blame violent video games.
Yeah, we've been here before.
And violent lyrics and rap music. And going back to the fucking Comics Codes Authority of the 1950s.
Or the Satanic Panic of the 80s.
At some point, you have to realize that media is out there. You can't restrict it. There's a First Amendment on media in general and entertainment. And you have to pinpoint something more specific than, I watched something where someone shot something.
Right.
Because tens of millions of people consume the same exact media.
Yeah, are we going to tax R-rated movies?
Whether it's comic books, whether it's movies, whether it's Netflix, whether it's The Sopranos on TV, we all watch the same media. So unless a specific show came out or game, and all of a sudden you had copycat killers because of a specific game, you cannot blame the media that we are watching for our behavior, because it's irresponsible. And out of there's always going to be, first of all, there's always going to be, put it bluntly, there's going to be people that are off their nut.
Yeah.
And anything could set someone off. So when the Commerce Code Authority kicked in the 50s, yeah, someone took an axe and killed someone, and they found they had a bunch of those like 50s EC horror movie, you know, horror comics. So because of that, we'll change the entire industry because of one person. So, and of course, they try to do this after Columbine because the kids used to play Doom and had, you know, they had custom levels and things. Like, okay, it has to be Doom because these two kids who were bullied and didn't have proper parenting went out and went off their rocker and shot a bunch of kids at high school. So it's the easiest solution to a complicated problem that you can search for. And plus, it gets you in the news because we're talking about it.
Right.
All of a sudden, now this Nardolillo is we're talking about this guy. We never would talk about this guy because of that. But this is not the only instance of someone talking about it. The governor of Kentucky, according to a Newsweek article, sidestepped calls for gun control in the wake of a school shooting, because that's, why would you go towards that angle? Why would you start at the end and work backwards of a problem? We'll start at a hypothetical,
yeah,
you know, that you can't prove and you don't know how to stop. So let's have an honest conversation about violence and pointing the blame at video games and music. Yes. Yes, I'm sure all these shooters are listening to NWA lyrics still.
Yeah.
And going off and shooting people with their AK. We need to have an honest conversation as to what should and should not be allowed in the United States as relates to the things being put in the hands of our young people. But we have barriers, Ian, already in place for things that minors can buy. We do. So, again, I think these are cop-outs.
No, they're total cop-outs. They're absolutely cop-outs. And it's so bad that they so badly want to avoid discussions on things that we've been avoiding discussions
universal,
on for so
how
long.
About universal background checks, which 90% of Americans are for, according to polling.
Yeah, but, you know, we can't have that.
Oh, because it's a slippery slope. This is what's funny about it. And this the hypocrisy of this being for, I'm a big, this is the Kentucky governor. I'm a big believer in the First Amendment and right to free speech. But there are certain things that are so graphic as relates to violence and things that are so pornographic on a whole another front that we allow to pass under the guise of free speech, which arguably are. But there is zero redemptive value. So could you say the same thing about the Second Amendment?
Yeah, you could. You could
say the same thing.
But that's an
I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment. But you know what, Ian? There are certain things that are just so wrong that relates to violence and things that are just so awful on a whole nother front that we allow to pass on the guise of gun rights.
Yeah.
It's the same fucking statement.
I mean, I see a lot of well-regulated militias around, but, you know.
I'm not even going to get into the interpretation of the Second Amendment. But the point is that I like when it's an amendment that they can, okay, well, the Second Amendment, you can't touch it at all because it's a slippery slope. But First Amendment, it's not a slippery slope at all. Let's just get rid of violent music and games or movies, because that's really the issue here.
It's all picking and choosing, and so much of it has to do with pocketbooks. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's zero upside to any of this in the public domain, let alone in the minds and hands and homes of our young people. Oh, he's talking about guns? Oh, no, he's talking about freedom of speech and media.
Except for the fact that so many people use this as, I mean, music is such a healthy escape and a way to get aggression out. It's so healthy in so many ways that that's just insane.
I'm going to say is I'm not even going to make it an argument about what we should change right now. But I'm going to say, if you're so afraid of touching the Second Amendment, fuck off with attacking the First.
Yeah.
Just fuck the hell off. You want to hold on to the Second? Hold on to the First and don't attack one to make up for maybe the shortcomings of the Second or gun laws.
Yep.
Don't be a fucking pussy. Governor of Kentucky. That's ridiculous. But going back in terms of the taxes, that's not going to – I mean, that money should be – you'd hope that money would be appropriated anyway for mental health issues and helping out kids in schools.
It's never going to be, though.
But, again, you get your name in the news. It's a hot topic. I'm running for Senate, and that's why you decide to talk about it. You would never talk about it before. You know it's probably not going to pass. You know, there'll be so many lawsuits over something like that, because then it's attacking – you know, anything you might think would be detrimental, we'll throw a fucking tax on it. the fucking Diet Coke I just threw over there. Well, it could be something bad in there. It might be cause me to be violent in 5 years if I drink too much of it. Maybe. It happened to one person. So let's tax all of them.
Diet Coke is so delicious.
Now I'm turning into libertarian right now, but I have my leanings. But all right. So anyway, anything else to add on this? I'm really fucking annoyed. I'm really annoyed by this fucking governor of Kentucky.
I have a lot to add, which is why I'm going to stop.
Matt Bevin. I'll fucking run against you, Matt, in Kentucky. Ridiculous. Anyway, it really annoys me going after the First Amendment when you don't want to touch anything with another one.
Fucking
cowardly.
You know, that one's fucking clad in armor, not to ever be touched, but everything else.
Fucking ridiculous. Anyway, so that was actually a Q&A as well. Video games getting the blame for mass shootings. Your thoughts? My thoughts is fucking stupid. That's my thoughts.
Yeah.
It's fucking ridiculous. You blame heavy metal in the 80s for those satanic rituals you heard about at the lake where you live. Like, oh, they were sacrificing a goat. Never happened.
No, never happened.
Speaking of regulation of video games, Ian.
Yeah.
This is interesting, and this is something that's been long overdue.
Actually, this but I'm all for.
This could almost be the ESRB trying to get ahead of the problem. But the ESRB is now going to start instituting a plan to label games, you know, games labeled for like violence or nudity or naughty words, what the hell else have you. They're going to start labeling in-game sales so that you know that, oh, if I'm buying this game, they're going to try to fleece me before I buy it, which I'm surprised they didn't do that anyway, you know. But
rated F for fleecing.
Very good, Ian. You built that comedy pyramid. So if you look at the letter here, it's long, but it's a response to Senator Hassan, who has concerns about loot boxes like I do. I think it's a form of gambling.
I think we all do.
Targeting mostly children, but targeting people that probably shouldn't know better, to be honest. You know, if you don't experience with gambling and all of a sudden it's in your video game.
Yeah,
I don't know how you know to respond to that. What if you went to this supermarket and all of a sudden a roulette table comes out and say, "Oh, you can bet on that. If you get red or black, you get a free Mario cereal." You're like, "What if that happened in the middle of everyday life?"
Or I would like some Gala apples. Nope, spin a wheel.
give us 25 cents. You might get an apple. You might get a syringe. That's your. But isn't that the same thing? Video games should have nothing to do with gambling.
No,
like they should have. Like the two should be totally far apart. One is pure and innocent. And one, you might, you know, sacrifice your college's mutual funds. And
I mean, if you want to play Vegas Dreams, that's fake money.
I said your college's mutual fund. Your kid's college fund. God damn it, Pat, it's late.
It is.
But you see what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
So,
I feel you.
So they're going to have an in-game purchase label. And Senator Maggie Hassan, Democrat from New Hampshire, which I always forget to state, unfortunately, she called it a step forward, the plan. But she's troubled by the organization's skepticism over the potentially addictive nature of loot boxes. She says, the ASRB's actions today are a step forward in addressing consumers' concerns about in-game purchases, including loot boxes. We have senators in the U.S. now knowing what loot boxes are. This is what I was trying to avoid.
Yes.
Because this is where legislation will actually make sense if ESRB and the industry doesn't self-regulate.
Well, and it sounds like the ESRB is, while they're taking a stance on it, it's soft because... Because
all the money.
Yeah, because of the money.
ESRB is funded by the game companies.
Exactly.
It's like the NRA. They're the NRA of this. The ESRB, when you think about it.
Oh, we're so fucked. We're all gross.
She says the harmful impact that loot boxes can have without adequate parental controls and transparency. While today's announcement of the creation of a new in-game purchases label and the ESRB's response to my letter are a positive step for parents and consumers, I'm still concerned by the ESRB's skepticism regarding the potentially addictive nature of loot boxes and microtransactions in video games. I will work with all relevant stakeholders to continue oversight on these issues and ensure that meaningful improvements are made to increase transparency and consumer protections. Of course these are addictive. Gambling's addictive.
That's like the shithead doctors in the 80s who were skeptical over the addictive nature of opiates.
Or the, you know, took the, you know, 1 in 10 doctors still think that cigarettes don't cause lung cancer. You know, like the people that were holding on, like the ones that were funded by the big tobacco companies. So
the world is gross.
Absolutely, it's run by money, Ian. I think we know that by now.
Well, yeah, we do.
It's capitalism.
It's capitalism.
But this is where you need regulations, and this is where I don't want to go against the libertarianism because you need regulation. Because sometimes we have to, we need protection from our innate inadequacies as human beings sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes humans are assholes.
Yeah.
And we don't look out for the best interests of each other.
No, we don't.
When it comes to money or personal gain or greed. Sometimes you need someone to help. You know you're being a fuck. You're being a fuckface. Now, let's take a step back. Be less of a fuckface. Don't fleece 5-year-olds to try to get your in-game CS:GO knife or whatever with that's colored like Donkey Kong's crotch. I don't know.
Let's stop calling school shootings false flags.
Oh, that's something else. That's
but hideous. I mean, still, let's not do that.
But that goes back to money as well, because you have some maybe people of below average intelligence thinking they're smarter, believing in disgusting conspiracy theories.
Just continuing on with the world being disgusting. That's all.
People are disgusting at times. Mm-hmm. Not everyone out there listening. Few of you might be. I guarantee a few of you.
Not
are.
All people. I mean,
not all Scotsmen. But I still don't know what that actually means. That are.
ESRB
said. ESRB said, based upon our research, 91% of parents indicate that they do not allow their children to make in-game purchases without permission. The ones that know about it, right?
Yeah, just like 100% of parents don't want their children smoking, but whatever.
They did admit we know there is very low awareness of loot boxes among parents. So, 91% of the parents that know about it, maybe, but it's a skewed fucking fact. If you're like a 45-year-old or 40-year-old, and you're not into video games, and you're fucking 10-15-year-olds playing Call of Duty, you have any fucking clue there's a loot box in the game?
You know, it's amazing
the kids in his room playing for 8 hours a day, you don't give a shit. You don't, it's your fault for not parenting well, not knowing what's in the game, but you don't know there's a fucking loot thing going on.
Back when we were kids, cash was king. It amazes me how easy kids get their parents' credit card numbers today and get into trouble with that sort of shit.
And people say, well, it's a parent's fault. Well, it's the same thing in like anything else. It's like, well, you want to lock, you don't want to put the liquor out for the kid to take a swig of it. You want to lock it up with some, but there's got to be controls either way. There's got to be some sort of controls. There's got to be a fail-safe. In this case, it's a lot easier to get a credit card number. A kid can steal it even versus getting a swig of alcohol.
Well, we just live in a world where cash isn't really a thing anymore, and everything is transacted via card. And if a parent is going to buy something for their kid, it's not as easy being like, okay, here's $10, go to the mall. That just doesn't exist anymore.
There's a credit card, buy some bullshit digital assets in a game that are worth nothing in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
So anyway, anything else to add to this?
Nah.
ESRB, you got to fucking do something about this. I know this is the basis of the industry now, by and large. But if you don't act, like we're saying forever, the government's going to act on it and force your hand on it and do something about it.
And so, we really don't want to get to that point.
No, the point is you want to prevent the government from stepping in and doing it. Because then they'll overstep their bounds. And then you might be worse off or in a different direction entirely. You know, what if they succeeded with, getting rid of violent video games in the 90s?
Right.
If the ESRB didn't put up, the ratings in the first place and establish all that.
The government gets involved. All your video games might be they'll come and take your video games and replace them all with guns.
They'll trade in the games for guns program?
Yeah.
Speaking of games, Ian.
Here's a fun thing.
There's a fun thing. It's a new game. It's a new old game. It's an old new game.
It's an old game, but it's new to a lot of people because it's now available to emulate. So
emulate.
Some people may know about this. Hudson, our beloved Hudson.
Honeybee!
Hudson Soft was actually given the license by Nintendo to port over a number of their NES/arcade game properties to some various computers back in the 80s.
Japanese ones.
Yeah, Japanese computers like the Sharp X1 and a few others. Now, a couple of the more popular games that they were able to port were like Super Mario Brothers, which was very different. And then I believe Mario Brothers the arcade game, which was different in the fact that it allowed you to like jump and turn in midair, which kind of became the basis for the, I believe the European Super Mario Brothers, there was like a deluxe one that was different from the arcade game. You would know different. The Super Mario Brothers that came out that let you like turn in midair and stuff like that.
You mean the arcade one?
The arcade one doesn't let you do that. This one was enhanced. The cartridge one. The like later released one.
For original Mario Bros. Arcade?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Famicom Disk System one.
Okay. So it was kind of like that one.
Like that. Okay.
But so we have another one of their strange ports that... had it never been dumped, it was kind of hard to find. It was rare, and it was purchased for $415 off of Yahoo Auction.
That's where these are popping up. A lot of these are popping up. Like a lot of these Satella games, for example. I think I went over one when you were on the podcast, like one of the Kirby ones. The blank ones show up. The blank
Super Famicom games,
and they figure out, oh, one of the games around there that haven't been dumped because Nintendo's not dumping them for
right.
whatever reason.
So this is basically a pseudo sequel to Donkey Kong 3 because it couldn't handle necessarily the same setup that the arcade version of Donkey Kong 3
that
could.
Extreme
right
complicated setup. The PCs and consoles were so far apart from each other until really. Even the late 90s.
Yeah, they really were.
Or even beyond that. Yeah.
So Donkey Kong, this was called...
Donkey Kong 3.
The Great Counterattack.
Or Donkey Kong 3, Daiyakushu.
And in it, you still play as Stanley. He was...
Exterminator.
Yeah, he was an exterminator. Yeah. And in the arcade game, you played through various greenhouses with different levels... And Donkey Kong would lower himself onto vines, and you had to stop him from lowering all the way down on the vines by shooting bug spray up his ass. And
a little strange.
Yeah.
Let's say this was the Sharp X1 computer version.
Version.
So there's multiple versions, depending on what...
Yeah, there's two other versions that they haven't found yet to compare differences.
How they don't find these? People just threw the discs out?
They were just rare. But yeah, I mean, floppy disk games from Japan, probably not the easiest things to find.
NEC PC-8801 and PC-6601. So those are the other two versions of it.
So what made this different was it got rid of the multiple levels of the greenhouse. Got rid of the greenhouses entirely. And there's no vines for Donkey Kong to lower himself down on. He floats down on two small parachutes. You still have to stop Donkey Kong with bug spray. But the backgrounds are different. You kind of go on a tour of the world and then into outer space. There's 20 levels, and apparently the game's really, really hard, and so far there's no documentation of all 20 levels, although as the article states, written by Chris Kohler, my pal Chris Kohler, now that it's been emulated, it's likely that we'll start seeing all those backgrounds very soon. So this is just neat because A, it's Hudson Soft. B, it's one of those instances where Nintendo licensed out their properties to someone else.
Looks like you already can play it on the emulator. They already dumped it.
You can. That's what I'm saying. So you can emulate it now.
There's already a video you can watch.
And it's very different. So this is very cool. I would love to see the other two versions pop up and compare them. And the Hudson ports overall were just they're just very neat curiosities.
There's also an article about the painstaking ripping process of getting it off the old disc.
Oh, I'm sure it's insane
because it's not like you got to find that disc drive. And I don't know how you rip it off. I have no clue how you would do that for an old system like that. That you got to find the old computer or mock something up. So it's not as easy as finding a disc drive and copying the file. It sounds like
it never is.
You know, this is something a little more complicated than that. So yeah, they had to mock something up. They had to get looks like a disk drive, and they're connected to another computer. And Jesus, I didn't want to try to get into that.
I love the aesthetic on these backgrounds, though.
Oh yeah, it's very interesting. So it actually looks funny. Yeah, you can see that this is not exactly as powerful as the arcade version.
Oh
not
yeah,
not even close. It's jittery, like four frames a second. You know, 5 frames a second for like the bugs are not flying smoothly.
No,
in the air. Donkey Kong, yes, is on parachutes. Somehow the little parachutes are holding him. I don't know how. And you can leave the Earth. I don't know. It's the backgrounds are bizarre. Like you're like on the.
I love them. They're kind of like spooky.
There's one with a little road on the side. I mean, they're three-dimensional. We're talking mid-80s graphics on a PC. It looks like most of the assets that they could transfer over. With Donkey Kong, looks like the Donkey Kong. Stanley kind of looks like Stanley. The bugs look like the bugs. And you're on the highway shooting Donkey Kong. Then you're where else are you here? Yeah, you're in a there's some weird blubby looking green things in the background. What the hell? it's bizarre. But okay, so hopefully hopefully the other ones they can find the other versions of and see how much different they are. They're probably the same, you know, in theory, it's just different graphics for the different
computers. I would assume.
You know, like Apple II versus Commodore version. It's going to be the same game in essence, but,
right,
you know, some little changes will be there. All right, check out Chris Kohler's article. Well, I'm not arguing with him about grading games on Twitter. He'll write a good article about Lost Donkey Kong.
You and Chris, man.
What's wrong with Chris? Don't make fun of him.
I'm not. What? More making fun of you.
Make fun of me? You're on my side when it comes to this debate, I thought. Another week, Ian. Another awful idea from Atari.
And another awful cryptocurrency.
Yes, because when Paris Hilton has her own cryptocurrency and anyone else, Kodak has one, but Kodak actually has a purpose from what I found from my friend.
But Kodak hasn't even launched yet. They announced it, and then they were like, oh, we're going to delay this because things are bad for us.
So Atari is kind of like that old high school crush you had that fond memories of, hung out with. But now you hear just a meth whore at this point. Just a crack addict, just going down anyone you can in order to get some cash. Get some cash for that next hit.
Get that next hit of Crocodile or...
Because when we talk about Atari watches...
Flocka or whatever.
Weird-ass Atari consoles. Raising money for ports of games that already possibly exist.
Atari speaker hats.
Yes. Yes. And now the Atari token. So... All right. So Fred Chesney, CEO of Atari Game Partners, bragged to Polygon. This is a Gizmodo article. He bragged to Polygon that the company's new leadership had rescued it from the edge of bankruptcy over the last few years. We had 30 million pounds of losses, 35 million pounds of debt. Today, no more debt. We are profitable. All right. That would mean that Atari isn't quite in the desperate position that Kodak has been over the last year, but still plowing into the land of corporate-backed initial coin offerings. That's what Gizmodo says. So one of the reasons why they're probably not in trouble with bankruptcy is they're selling the Atari name to anyone that wants to buy it, whether
right.
it's Denny's, whether it's me, whether it's Asteroids. You. They're just pouring out the Atari name and properties wherever they want to. So, okay. And actually, the Atari stocks went up after they announced this crypto
by
currency.
By double. Because people will back anything that is crypto at the moment.
They're taking a stake in a company that's building a blockchain-based digital entertainment platform, and as part of the agreement... Part of the agreement with investing in this company, they were going to create its own digital currency called Atari Token. The company is also expanding its online casino gaming partnership with PowerPlay Limited to allow gambling with digital currencies. That sounds like a fucking awesome idea as well.
Yeah. What aren't they doing?
There's a press release saying, just talking about blockchain. By the way, blockchain technology is for real, and that's revolutionary. Cryptocurrency, on the other hand, we'll see where that ends up.
These fuckers are like... king of shitty buzzwords that just like make me not want to have anything to do with this. Like, blockchain technology is poised to take a very important place in our environment and to transform, if not revolutionize, the current economic ecosystem, especially in the areas of the video game industry and online transactions. Given our technological strengths with the development studios and the global reputation of the Atari brand, we have the opportunity to position ourselves attractively in this sector. What, are you going to lay sexually on a couch? Our objective is to take the strategic position with a limited cash risk in order to optimize the assets in the Atari brand. You told me nothing.
Brand, the B word.
Brand, position, attractively, strategic, limited cash risk.
So we still don't know anything about the Atari box console at all.
Nope.
I didn't check into the Roller Coaster Tycoon fundraiser.
That was stupid. We talked about that. That makes no sense. porting a mobile game for, what, $1 million?
And with all these crypto coins, there's so many that are turning out to be Ponzi schemes, scams, trying to get, what was the one, BitConnect, which was a marketplace, ended up being literally a Ponzi scheme. It's like, oh, we're gonna guarantee you a return on your investment. You can't fucking guarantee a return on investment unless something fucking weird is happening or something illegal.
Right.
Taking the new money to give to the investors above. That's basically what happened with something like that. So, oh God, it's so fucking, it's frustrating. They're getting all these people to they don't know any better to invest money. They shouldn't be investing into cryptocurrency. Yes, some people are making money, but when everyone's making money, someone's losing money.
Yeah.
When you're buying and selling a digital asset, there's going to be winners and losers. So people don't talk about the losers, and there's a lot of them. So, anything else you need to add to this?
No, I'm just really glad that, you know, Atari's getting into the economic marketplace. That seems like a great place for them to be.
They've done well with economics in the past.
Yeah, they really have.
Throughout the decades.
They're definitely...
They've been stalwarts of economic positive tendencies. And all right, so that's funny. It's insane. Stamps.com, Ian. I've used them for years. I've sold DVDs, wristbands, T-shirts, the odd DVD, the odd book.
They are odd.
But you can get postage via stamps.com on demand. On demand, you print real U.S. postage for any letter, any package, right from your home or office. It's convenient.
Incredibly convenient.
It's incredibly convenient. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when it's convenient for you. You can even then schedule a pickup of your mail if you so desire in packages. So stamps.com will even send you a digital scale so you can weigh your letters and packages, but don't step on it yourself. It might break. and you print the exact amount of postage every time. And plus you get a little discount rate with your stamps.com account as well. You just click print, mail, and you're done. It's a no-brainer. It'll save you a lot of time. You can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. You can do the insurance. You can do the delivery confirmation, et cetera, et cetera. You can even do international mail.
Oh, wow.
If you know people cross borders, if you want to build bridges.
Overnight and all that, too?
You met someone at the Olympics Village. You know, you want to send them, I don't know, some Pop-Tarts from the U.S. They don't have them in, I don't know, wherever Mongolia is.
I love Pop-Tarts.
So at the CU Podcast, we're really busy. We rely on stamps.com to print out shipping labels so we can send out, you know, stuff to people every once in a while. Like, Ian, if you do more of those bird boxes, you can send them out. But like I said, I've used them plenty of times over the past, probably, 4 or 5 years. So... We got a special offer for stamps.com for the listening audience. It includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to stamps.com and click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Well, not just you, anyone else. And type in CU Podcast for that special offer. Again, go to stamps.com, click the mic, and enter CU Podcast. Stamps.com, helping me mail stuff because it's convenient.
So... Metal Gear Survive is out. It's the first Metal Gear game. Excuse me. I believe, unless there's a pachinko machine or something like that, that has been released since Kojima Productions is disbanded and Kojima is no longer with the Konami.
He passed away. What?
No. He's alive and well. He's just not with that shitty studio anymore. Well, that shitty company anymore. Which is a shame. They used to be great. Actually, I don't know if they considered Metal Gear 5 a Kojima production. Or they scrubbed his name from it.
They scrubbed his name.
Yeah, they scrubbed his name from it. Yeah. So Metal Gear Survive is a... Some people gave it fairly... decent reviews.
Is this a whole new game or is it like a...
It's a whole new game. Okay. It's basically a mine for materials survival game. You have to have water and food and fight zombies and do all that
it's
shit.
It's Uncharted?
No, that's not Uncharted.
It's not Uncharted. Not Uncharted. The fucking game where you go explore and get mined for shit. Not Uncharted. What the fuck? I'm out of it.
Not Minecraft either.
No, the other one. You're exploring the universe.
No, it's not that. Anyways, oh, never mind, Pat.
What the hell was that game called that flop? Anyway.
No Man's Sky?
No, it's not No Man's Sky.
Jesus. Anyway.
I'm loopy.
Yes, you are, and
I am too. What's been that pizza I ate before the podcast?
Yes. It was
spiked.
It was that bean you had.
It was spiked and not your cat.
So, anyways, it's not so much the game. People have talked about it leading up about how it's a cash grab, obviously. We're going to talk about more about why. We're going to talk about two things. One, how the developers couldn't resist taking a shot at the company they were working for. But two,
oh, yeah, I read about that.
But two, more importantly, is just how bad the microtransactions are in this game. So you can pay for additional like troops to help you. You can pay for additional perk slots. You can pay, basically, you can pay for all sorts of stuff to make the game easier. You can sort of do the pay to win sort of stuff. Although,
okay. you say you can pay for save slots? Is that what you just said?
Not yet. Okay. I didn't say that yet.
Okay, so
you can pay for additional. You can pay for additional. We'll get there. You can pay for additional perk slots. You can pay for additional help on
a perk slot.
Yeah.
What the fuck's a perk slot?
Like extra abilities.
So not the abilities themselves, slots to hold the abilities?
Yes.
Like that wouldn't be included with the ability?
Right. You can pay for slots to hold more abilities.
It's like, okay, I'm buying special ammo, but I need to buy the special ammo clip to hold the ammo in my gun.
So
what the fuck?
That's all pretty ridiculous, although a lot of the reviews have said that it's not necessary. But what is really bad is, yes, Pat, you blew the reveal. Although I think most people
I was zoning out from when you said perk slots. I said it sounded like save slots to me.
You can buy, it comes with one save slot. You can buy additional save slots for $10.
Each.
$10 each.
Each.
$10 each. 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 Yes.
Is Konami the scumbag song of the week? Konami is the scumbag
seller.
Surprisingly, the scumbag seller of the week is Konami.
Yeah. Charging $10
that
for save slots.
That is insane.
Yeah.
That should be criminal. That should be criminal.
Yep. And I'm sure their excuse is, well, it's a survival game, so you can't have multiple save slots.
Well, it's not realistic.
Yeah, because it's not real. I'm sure that's their excuse, but
like
it's
zombies and fucking carrying 8,000 rounds of that on your person when you're running around in 25 different weapons at one time. That's realistic,
right? So
fucking idiots.
It's absurd, and it's also a way to. In reality, it's Monster Hunter has multiple save slots.
Frank's even upset.
Okay,
Frank fell off.
If Vonnie wanted to play Monster Hunter on my PlayStation Network account, she could go in, create her own character, and play. This is basically an opposite situation. If I were to buy Metal Gear Survive and Vonnie decided that she wanted to play, she'd have to pay an additional $10 to create a character on my
account. Make sure you can't earn, what are these SV coins to get save slots?
Apparently for the first week they've been giving some away as like a login bonus,
but
I don't think that's going to be the case after like the first 2 weeks.
So you can earn these coins in the game?
No.
You can't?
No. At least reviewers have said they have found no way to earn the coins in the game. Other than
so they've been giving them out like a fucking drug dealer, giving out the first free hit
for like the first couple weeks.
Here.
Supposedly they're giving
earn
some
half
away.
half a save slot. Here,
it'll
feel good to be able to save.
Not count on Konami to be giving away even that many.
This is insane.
Yeah,
this is fucking nuts.
Yep.
Is this the peak? It went from DLC being unnecessary. Well, you can complain about the price structure going back to like Street Fighter fucking 4 costumes
right.
and stuff.
Charging $5 for 4 costumes.
It's a fucking palette swap or whatever. That's kind of dumb, but you don't need it. Now it's going to necessary items that you couldn't dream of them charging for that you're now accepting. And this is only in the matter of like 5 years. It's swung this fucking far.
Pay $10 for your strong attack button to work. Or you can just go through the game using weak attacks.
All right.
I mean...
Can I activate my right trigger button for $3? Like, it doesn't function? Like, to unlock that? Is that where it's going to go to?
Yeah. I mean, it's a possibility.
Can I pause the game for $12?
But apparently,
is that possible?
Apparently, we're not the only people who are mad about it.
I would think not, Ian.
There is a fun little Easter egg in here. So when you start the game and you put your name in, it shows your name being added to a list on a clipboard. And if you take the first letter of each of the last names on the page other than yours, it spells out KJP forever, which would be Kojima Productions forever.
Well, that's nice.
Which is pretty fun.
That's fantastic.
But even more underneath that, two names, Bastard Yoda and Cunning Yuji. The Survives director is Yoda Tsumizaki, and producer is Yuji Korekado.
So they're attacking the producers of the game?
And both are listed as AWOL.
Whoa.
And
without leave for those out there not familiar with military parlance.
And then this article says a little deeper. If you take the first letters of the last names of Iron Marlin and Dire Gibbon, you get MG or Metal Gear. Both soldiers are listed as KIA, killed in action.
Okay, so Jesus Christ, this is unbelievable. So is this a case of Konami obviously biting up more than they can chew, thinking that consumers will accept this level of ludicrousness? And now there's going to be finally pushback, because this is all. This almost seems. It almost makes the Battlefront 2 thing seem cute. That it costs way too much time. It takes way too much time to unlock Vader and Luke Skywalker. Now though, we're talking about in-game elements. As someone's calling me, who's actually decent looking. Damn it! I can't answer the phone. that never happened on the podcast before. Wow, Pat got a call from someone.
But this is how DLC progresses. It starts with something like Street Fighter 4. And we're all like, this is ridiculous. And now that sort of stuff is stuff that people, if they want to pay for it, they don't bat an eye anymore because it's been around for so long.
Sure.
So then new DLC comes out and we think that's ridiculous. And like you said, it makes previous DLC look quaint and non-problematic. So we just got through something as ridiculous as Battlefront 2. And now
major backlash.
Where there's major backlash. But now we're looking at something even more ridiculous.
This is a theme. It's like, it's getting used to school shootings. But this is awful DLC.
Yeah. So now
when does it become regular?
Right.
When is this acceptable?
We look at something like this and enough of this happens. And then all of a sudden the Battlefront 2 stuff just becomes acceptable.
I'm not saying this is as bad as a school shooting before you come. I'm just saying.
No, it's just been a reoccurring theme.
When it starts reoccurring,
this podcast.
You should always be angry by it at the 10th time. You shouldn't get used to it.
Before you become numb to it.
Yeah, it's a whole frog slowly boiling, whatever. You slowly raise the temperature. It's okay. I'm not cooking from the inside out because it's happening slowly over a period of time. So, wow. Konami. Woo. I'm so glad you don't work there anymore, Pearl. I'm so glad my Pearl isn't working there anymore.
You've really been bringing up Pearl a lot lately.
Have I? A lot?
Yeah. Last podcast, you brought her up like twice.
Oh, well, we talked about Konami.
Yeah, sure.
So, all right, here's to you, Konami. Make those extra dimes and pennies. I'm sure that'll work out for you. Ian.
Yeah.
At the weird Sunday recording session of the CU podcast to go over Black Panther, which you can watch here because it's not in the audio version. It's an exclusive. We spoke about it on a momentous occasion.
We did. You completing entirely. Your United States. North America.
Don't leave out Canada.
It's Canada as well. Your North American NES collection.
So go there and watch that. And we'll come back to me. Ian, do you want to talk about a momentous occasion too while we're here?
All right, let's do it and then get my ass home. Let's celebrate very special occasion.
Oh, this is kind of special. So I started collecting. Man, it's hard to pin down when I went to Funkoland and bought that NES again for like $35, whatever they were selling for in 97. It was probably 97. It was just say 20 years. of collecting NES games.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a shelf over there, the brand new, not brand new shelf, brand new location of the games there. Now one shelf, the Turbo games aren't delegated to the bottom row anymore. They're going to get more respect in here in the future, as they should. But I have, by this point in time, I have completed my North American NES game collection.
Woo!
Where's the clapping? Where's the applause? I should get the Goldberg fireworks out like I had when you reappeared last year. So 20 years, thousands of hours wasted on eBay, at swap meets, at gaming conventions, searching for lots of monies. Don't ask me how much money. It's impossible to know how much money I spent on all of them. And that also includes getting hundreds of box games that I also have the carts of, including all the black box games, all the silver Konami games, all the APOG Pat original games I had in the box. You know, I have the Tengen Gold games up there, you know, a lot, all the 1986 games. So yeah, we'll just put it all together. You know, that my NES collecting days are in the twilight at this point. I'm missing a handful of the NES European games. I'll probably pick them up at some point. Those aren't that hard to find. And I'm missing like 8 NES manuals. So in theory, I'd like to get all the manuals. I will probably never get a Steam Events manual because it costs too much money. Then again, I said I'm never going to get Steam Events, and I got Steam Events somehow.
Sell up.
What?
I said sell up.
Son of a bitch. No. But someone asked me how I felt. Maybe someone who interviewed me for something that I can't get into right now. And the response I had when I got the final two games that I needed.
Empty.
It wasn't empty. Because that's kind of dark and unnecessary. But it was, I don't know if it was even relief. It was almost, I don't know if it was even bittersweet. Because I remember when we talked about me completing all the licensed games. I mentioned a few of them. That was like early 2010
mm-hmm.
or so. Wow, that far ago. When I completed all the licenses besides Steam Events, or basically got the NWCs at that time. It was early 2010, gotten the gray one. It was before early 2010. That, you know, I think the longer you're in the game of collecting, the less impact it has on each individual, quote-unquote, achievement, or if you want to say gain of your collection. Because over 20 years, when it's that much ingrained with you, it's not like I got into it in a year and got all the games, or in a few years. It's been so spread out that I couldn't tell you when I got most of the games on the shelf, or how I acquired some very specific ones, like the NWCs. I can tell you how I got them, but I can't tell you, you know, how I acquired Mermaids of Atlantis at this point. I can't tell you if it was eBay. I can't tell you. It definitely wasn't a flea market, but I can't tell you if I got a collection, if I traded for it. So it's such a big blur that it almost doesn't feel as significant as it should be that I completed a collection. But maybe that means at my age now that it doesn't mean as much anyway.
Right.
Maybe it doesn't. Maybe I've sort of evened out the highs and lows of collecting, not collecting, where my OCD isn't at the kick it should be, where if this was 5 years ago, I would have felt so much more relief of getting those last two games.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But then again,
rainbow would have sprouted from your head. But
five, 6 years
today.
Ago, I was a much more bigger nut than I was now.
Debatable.
Debatable? That I'm just as big as that now? Thanks. But that also goes to show you that I didn't rush to complete the collection over all these years. And I could have any time.
Right.
But maybe I wanted...
No, I remember there was a chance for you to do it last year.
Yeah.
And you passed on it.
Yeah.
After serious debate.
Yeah, so I think, I don't know. It's I don't want to say it's empty because I don't want people to say, oh, Pat, you're a con or whatever, which would be funny. But I don't know. It doesn't hold the significance that it might have years past for me. And maybe because also, you know, I didn't get a great deal on these final few games I needed. I got a pretty good deal on one, but the other ones I didn't. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but you have to save me. But maybe it's part of growing up or maturing that I don't need these games to fill that any sort of nostalgic hole in my heart. Maybe they've been filled already, or maybe that hole naturally filled itself over time with other interests. Not that I've gained a huge amount of other interests in the past 4 or 5 years, but maybe my priorities have just shifted.
Yeah, I think it is priority shifting. You're satisfied, you're happy, but it's not it went from becoming this great goal to something that I would say it probably settled back into a healthy hobby territory, whereas perhaps it was more. I'm not saying like that far, but yeah, something more akin to an obsession.
Well, the thing that goes, I mean, when I used to call you from the swap meet every Sunday at like 9:30 a.m. to tell you about the stuff I found, I probably wasn't in my right mind part of those times.
No, you weren't. I mean, no.
You can probably tell, right? It's like, why is Pat telling me he found a fucking, you know, Sega Saturn group of games or whatever. Yeah. I told you. I mean, it's cool, but then again, you don't get up like normal people.
No, I don't.
But I don't. I haven't. Like normal people. I haven't had the urge though to go out to the swap meet nearly as much as I could. I mean, I could have went this morning, recording this on a Sunday. I didn't go.
Yeah,
I went 2 weeks ago, but the stuff I got, I already forgot what I bought. Oh, I got a cool PlayStation controller. I got to show you. That's what I got there. Ooh. The one that you might have not seen or very rarely seen. I'll show you that PlayStation. Yeah, but other than that though, see, you're excited. That's why I called you at 9:15 in the morning. But you see what I mean, though? I think I'm slowing down my old age. So I'm not done collecting entirely. I'm not saying that. But for the NES, I mean, pretty much might be calling it a day. Unless I get a Mahjong card and hold it over your head. I mean, that's pretty much it. But that's not North American. And like the same way the PAL stuff is not HK. As big party.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter as much. I always drew the line somewhere. I always say that because there's some collectors that don't draw the line. And I see them now selling their collections where you see like, oh, they have all the rare, they have some test cards, and then they have all the Hong Kong cards, and they have all the Asian cards.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you got that Mahjong card, I mean, then you'd be starting on an HK collection.
Which is easier. It's easier than getting an NES US collection besides, of course, that game. I think there's one on eBay now for $22,000 in the box. Graded or best offer, but I wouldn't. Yeah, no, it's not going to go for that much. But yeah, I mean, I'm never going to go for the test carts. I don't care that much about them. I'll probably get one at one point. I have the test station, which basically takes the place of the test carts for the most part, but in a much bulkier, unnecessary way, which I want to get rid of probably eventually. But that's what I mean. I'm at that point. I have the M82, and that's still my favorite piece. I have all the box stuff. I almost have almost all the box console variants, except for a few weird ones, the top loader that came with like fucking Dr. Mario. I slapped a sticker on it and threw a Dr. Mario cart inside. It's like, I don't really need that. And that's where I know I started to really come back to earth, where it's like, no, I don't need all these NES box variants because they're sitting in fucking Tupperware tubs out there.
Yeah.
It's like, I might pare down at some point. But, you know, I got a few Turbo games left, North American. I know they're not PC Engineered.
Why would I say anything?
Yeah, because you'd have before. And I need one Sega Master System manual. But I have all the games for the US. But yeah, as I put up the games in this game room, I'm gonna see like, okay, this might be necessary, this might not be necessary for like Genesis. Those are like I said, half of my Genesis games are. It's not all of them in the box. So yeah, I might get to that point where I might start paring down from other systems. You know, I can always sell off all my Atari 2600 games to Renee because they're worth $10 each. You know, I have hundreds of those. So. By the way, I was going to tweet at him at SoCal. Someone was selling like a box of like 50 of them for like $30. I was going to tweet at him, hey, yeah, you make a fortune flipping these. You can go for it.
He was saying the 5200 games were 10 apiece.
Oh, he was trying to change his tune?
Huh?
Was he trying to change his tune? No, he said all of them in that box were $10 each in that box. You remember that?
Yeah, segment? But that was a box of. I'm just saying it was a box of 5200 games that he was saying were 5200 each, were $10 each, and then he quoted a box of Atari 2600 games, the entire box at just being a ridiculously high price.
Well, yeah, which came down to $10 each when you extrapolated back.
Okay, I mean, it was insane regardless.
It was insane regardless, but the 5200 games aren't $10 each.
We're splitting hairs, but yeah.
The whole point was that yes,
yeah, you should have sent the text.
I should have done it, but
or the tweet.
All right, so Ian, am I growing up? Am I just old and tired, or both?
I think you're growing up.
Think I'm growing up.
I think you're growing up.
You think I'm gonna get rid of my NES games at some point?
I think everything else might go at some point, but I think you'd probably hold on to your NES games
with confidence. Will I hold on to the Qbert plush sitting up, hanging out of it?
I mean, like I said, I could see most things going at some point, but not the NES games.
Well, the thing about
I could see all your box games going. I could see.
Oh, I could definitely see most of the box games going. I've said that already. Yeah. because I already have them all but eight I have already as a cartridge with the manual. You know, I can see, I mean, when you look at the Master System set, it's so small. And that includes like a handful of European games. It's so small that it doesn't take much room, so I couldn't see selling that.
Right.
Genesis games, though, the ones I don't even know what the hell they are. Like Balls, Balls 3D or whatever I'm looking at right now.
It's a fighting game.
Yeah, I know, Ian, it's a fighting game. I'll never play it.
I thought you just said that ones that you didn't know what they were.
Well, I mean, like, okay, ones I don't need to play or no. Like, damn it, it's so much farther away now than the old room. I can't see
okay,
them.
Okay, now you're yelling about collecting, which means that you're getting too worked up.
I'm getting too crazy again?
Yep.
Okay.
Bring it down.
Do I need Cyber... Actually, I do need Cyberball and Genesis because the NES version is terrible. So I do need that. All right. So, see, I'm not going to put out a Craigslist ad. That's another section of Craigslist. I'm not going to put out a Craigslist ad anytime soon, Ian. Is there anything from my collection you'd want to buy, potentially? In all honesty, is there anything that I have that you'd want besides my Game Boy black and white games that you're jealous of?
I'm not really jealous of that many of them anymore. I mean, there's probably some I'd want. No, not really. There's always Genesis games I want, but I don't want to collect for the Genesis again.
You don't? I can't.
Mm-mm, no.
Content with Starflight?
I mean, no. I do like Starflight, though.
I gotta play some of it. So the next step, though, is going to be actually this year, Super Nintendo games, getting them out and using them on the good old Super NT that maybe a certain NES punk's going to do a review of at some point if I can fucking get time through all this... jungle of junk and actually rearrange this room, I can get to it. And we can stream some stuff potentially, or you can stream it. You really don't want to be here.
Well, I mean, I just don't know what more to say about your collection.
I don't want to, I want something more metaphysical though, maybe. I don't know. Might move on to collecting other trinkets or something else? Because you always fulfill that need with something else.
Souls.
Collecting souls?
Collecting souls, yeah.
Also, collecting the souls of all the people on YouTube that have gone after me. In the past?
I guess.
You want to help me with that endeavor? Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe we'll do that this year.
I don't know how we'd catch them, but I mean, we could try.
Oh, metaphysically. Figuratively. Ian.
Figuratively.
No, not in person at a convention when they're afraid to talk to me because they're fucking cowards.
Wow. Okay, this is taking a turn.
Well, how do we go from that? From the
collection? I don't know. Anyways, congratulations, Pat, for finishing your collection. What the fuck?
Well, I feel hollow. That didn't really do much for me looking back at that when we recorded. That was a waste of time. Moving on into kind of a topic that just sort of hit fresh
today.
Get extra flavor, extra fun, extra cinnamon. Extra. What is that?
Extra sugar-free gum.
Sugar-free gum. I need some gum.
Extra cinnamon. Extra made good gum. Tea berry was my favorite.
Is Extra still around?
I don't think so.
Juicy Fruit's still around.
Oh, Juicy Fruit's still around.
It's going to move you.
Yeah, it's delicious stuff.
Gets right to you.
But you can chew a whole pack in like no
time.
The taste
is going to move you.
For 10 seconds.
What the fuck? This is a weird podcast. So, Ian.
Square Enix released Chrono Trigger on Steam today. You'd think that would be a momentous occasion for what is largely considered one of the best JRPGs in history. Certainly one of the best retro JRPGs. Except for the fact that Square Enix loves to push and port their shitty mobile versions. Now, these versions ostensibly contain the same gameplay, but the issue is they just absolutely kill them graphically. They run a lot of filters over them that cause the characters to look smudgy, Vaseline-like. They have thick black borders around them. They filter and kind of like try to up-res the tiles to the point where it's really easy to kind of notice how the old sprites tile out instead of meshing properly. Some graphics are totally redrawn for reasons that don't make sense. you know, instead of just being like the original sprite or slightly up-res.
Let me see what this costs on my phone.
It's $14.99.
The app does cost $14.99?
The Steam version, oh, yeah, it's $14.99.
I want to compare it to the...
Oh, the phone app, yeah. They're usually pretty damn expensive on the phone.
Pretty damn expensive? I'll tell you in a second how much it costs.
And the other thing is they redo the menus and they don't use like the same typography. As a matter of fact, this one looks like it uses straight up Arial.
Really?
The menus are different.
They can't even do like an 8-bit or 16-bit font.
Right. It all looks cluttered. And, you know, it's one thing when you're looking at it on a phone. It still looks awful. But when you're playing a mobile game, you know, a mobile port of something, and you're playing it on a computer, you know, that's basically inexcusable. Especially when there's other ports around. I mean, crap, you could have just released the Super Nintendo ROM officially, and people would have been, you know, far happier with it.
Yeah, unless there's some weird deal with Nintendo that they couldn't do that because it was on, like, a virtual console, but I don't see why it would, I don't see why that would matter. Yeah, that's really strange.
Yeah, so... You know, what started,
Chrono
I think...
Chrono Trigger is $9.99, the definitive edition on the phone.
Yeah, definitive my ass.
It's a 3.5 stars out of 5 with 185 rating.
What most people consider the definitive edition is the DS version, which gives you tons of different options for how you want to display the graphics between the top and the bottom screens. Okay. It's really quite nice, very pretty. You can do it. It's awesome on the DS version because you can have all the sprite work on the top, but all the menus and the text on the bottom so that everything is uncluttered and very pretty looking up top. So, you know, it's excellent. But everyone, I mean, one of the things everyone wonders is why Square Enix went this route with these graphics. They did it with Final Fantasy VI as well. And I would say arguably it looks even worse with Final Fantasy VI. So yeah, Square's hasn't been doing a great job with, a lot of their 2D, you know, remasters or definitive editions of their games. And I think a lot of people were more upset because, like I did, I logged on to Twitter and a lot of other people did, and they see Chrono Trigger trending. And everyone's like, oh, shit.
HD remaster.
Are we getting something real good here?
On the Switch.
Yeah, and then you click on it, and it's like, oh, Steam got the mobile version ported.
It's like the laziest thing you could have possibly done.
Yeah.
And why would they charge more for it than on the phone? Like, why would they charge more?
I don't know, probably because it just came out on Steam.
Same fucking game.
And I guarantee you it wasn't always $9.99 on the phone. I would almost bet that. Final Fantasy 1 on the iPhone was $17.99 when it first came out.
$17.99?
Yeah.
Did you have to pay for a save slot?
No.
Like a Metal Gear zombie Minecraft version of the fuck that game is? Unbelievable.
Oh, man. So... Yeah, I mean, there's that. That just came out today. I mean, it was worth mentioning. Lots of people were upset by it. I'm sure some people will buy it regardless, just so they have another way to play Chrono Trigger.
Because I haven't played it 18 times before.
But with so many different ways to do it, you know, this just doesn't seem like a way to do it. And if you're okay with playing it like this, just get it on your phone for $10. I mean,
maybe that's why it didn't show up on the SNES Classic. Who knows?
As much as I, you know, don't like playing games on phones, RPGs are actually among some of the easiest games to play on a phone with a digital D-pad.
You don't need to do quick movements. You don't have to worry about that as much.
Chrono Trigger's a little bit more precise, but still, it probably works
for the
fine.
Team attacks and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, you're not doing a lot of fast motion still. If I remember, I haven't played Chrono Trigger in 20 years almost.
Show.
I gotta get back into a little cute little Super Frog guy. What's his name? Prince Frog. What the fuck is this? All right. Well, that's fun. So, real quick, this is something. I don't know if you want to talk about this. I just saw this happen. That YouTube is outlining how Logan Paul's channel will be handled going forward. What are they gonna like? Look over his shoulder before he posts something up. Paul's rejoining YouTube's monetization program.
Jesus
Christ.
But
he's still ineligible for the Google Preferred ads, which are the premium ads. So, all right. So it's been, he's been suspended from the normal ads for over 2 weeks. Slap on the wrist as far as I'm concerned. They also put his YouTube Red series on hold. He's not on the platform's trending tab. Jesus Christ, he still was after the fucking suicide video?
Yeah.
He still was?
Yes.
Fucking what? YouTube's representative said Paul and those on his team had reviewed the company's community guidelines and advertiser-friendly guidelines, acknowledging they understand what is allowed in the site and what is required to ensure monetization. Like, you guys didn't go over that with him that before when he's earning millions of dollars? Like, that, you let it get to that point? You know? I almost feel like you have to have a contract for these 1% of YouTubers. Like, get to, like, look over it. Like if you're an athlete, right? You sign a contract to play on a team. There's like moral guidelines you have to follow,
yeah.
Team guidelines, or else you can be, you know, held in breach of your contract. You won't get paid out. It's almost like you have to do this with YouTubers now. I mean, obviously there's terms of service, but no one reads that when they click on. It's like, oh, give me my YouTube account. No one fucking reads that with games. It's just the same thing. So I'm not really going anywhere with this, except that he's going to be back on making money. So Susan Wojcicki, is how you say it, the YouTube CEO, said that he didn't deserve to be banned from the platform despite his crude actions. He hasn't done anything that would cause those three strikes. We can't just be pulling people off our platform. They need to violate a policy. We need to have consistent rules. All right. So he has the one strike. I guess torturing a fish and tasering a dead rat. The fish was alive. Doesn't constitute another strike. Okay. If that's the way you want to play it, all right. One strike still. Three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, still using the tag Suicide Forest to get hits on his other videos.
Some sort of Suicide Forest. Well, it is what it is. You know. And then British YouTuber KSI challenged Logan Paul. I think he's fighting Jake Paul. They're almost interchangeable, I guess. To a boxing match. That's a new thing now. YouTubers fighting each other.
Oh, good.
So who should I fight anyone? Any YouTuber I should fight, Ian?
Yeah.
Take a few people. So that's all. This will make YouTube. It's inconsequential.
Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the U.S. While many people know what we do, many don't know about the types of meals you eat when you cook with Blue Apron. You're not just having burgers for dinner, although sometimes you get those.
Sometimes there is a burger, though,
and they're really good when they send you burgers.
But you're making a short rib burger.
You're not just getting any old burger.
It's a short rib burger with hoppy cheddar sauce on a pretzel bun.
Yeah. And
I have not had that.
I'm feeling hungry.
Seared
steaks and thyme pan sauce with mashed potatoes, green beans, crispy shallots, and all under 45 minutes and without a trip to the grocery store.
You get all the ingredients you need.
Yep. And
locally sourced a lot of times.
Locally sourced. They're properly portioned out the ingredients, so you're not buying a whole bottle of sauce just to make one meal. You're getting everything you need. There's no waste.
You're not buying five sticks of butter you'll never use and realize when you move maybe to a house, why do I have a pound of butter still that I bought 6 years ago?
That sounds like maybe you experienced that.
Yeah, you just get the amount of sour cream you need, the amount of butter, so there's no waste.
Yes.
And the meal portions are perfect. When I had my beef stroganoff, I think it was a four-person meal. I probably made six portions out of it, six or seven.
I missed beef stroganoff.
You did. I almost said you're going to beef the stroganoff. You missed the beef stroganoff.
That's sad. I love beef stroganoff.
There's a family meal plan. There's a wine plan. You're going to go to blueapron.com/CU podcast. You can check out your week's menu and get $30 off your first order. And we've been eating this stuff for a while.
Yeah, we have.
It's yummy as hell.
It's very good. A lot of it is pretty healthy. And most of it can fit into a very balanced diet.
And a good variety of recipes each week. Usually there's like at least one beef, a chicken. There's a vegetarian option usually.
Well, that's the thing not to forget. That's important to know. Blue Apron will cater to your diet. You can select all vegetarian. You can do fish. You can pick and choose between beef, chicken, lamb. You can actually check off what they're going to send you.
Yep.
And then each week...
You can delay a week if you want. If you're going to be on vacation, doesn't matter.
Yeah, you can choose exactly how many meals there you want. You can usually plan about 2 months in advance. And if you want, they'll just send you what they think should be good every week. But you can actually go, and it's not just two menu options. There's usually like 4 to 5 menu options you can pick from if you want to get that into it.
Absolutely. So again, go to blueapron.com/CU podcast. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first Blue Apron order. Blue Apron, Ian, it's a better way to cook. It's time for a Patreon Q&A session.
All right.
So how do you get to our Patreon again, Ian?
Go to you go to patreon.com/CU podcast.
I'm waiting for you to get it right one time.
I did. I have.
And we're gonna change the tiers around. We'll announce that formally next time, in terms of what's going on that. But here's the first question. Here you go. Hopefully this doesn't blow your eardrums out.
Okay.
Hey guys, this is Gizmo from California calling in again. And what was the Super Nintendo Mini, you know, selling like hotcakes when it came out, and even in the UK and in the US, what's the possibility of there being another mini console, like say the Nintendo 64 or even the GameCube for that matter? While I think it's a possibility for the N64, there are some hopes that I think we might see some other mini consoles like the PlayStation 1, for example. But again, that's just wishful thinking. Do you think this might be possible? Or do you think that the mini N64 will sell even better or even the same as the SNES? I hope to hear your answer and wish you a good day. And Ian? My man!
All right. I paused it before that last gizmo. Okay. I'm still hedging my bets on a Nintendo 64 Classic. I'm like 50-50 on it. At first I thought there's no way it's going to happen, just because the controllers are more expensive than a Super Nintendo and NES controller. They're a lot more complicated. You're going to have to include two or more with that, potentially, depending on what games you're going to include with that. So it's a little bit more going on with the N64 because of that. There's also the aspect of the games costing more on a virtual console or aftermarket versus Nintendo and Super Nintendo, so you're cannibalizing a lot more. You're also talking about the emulation technology being a lot more, not primitive, but not as clean as Super Nintendo and NES when you talk about the N64. Not that they can't figure that out, you know, but
if anyone could figure it out, it would be Nintendo.
I mean, they already figured it out for the virtual console, yeah. But it's not quite the same because of those factors. There's also the games. You're going to be hard-pressed to find that elite list of games and get the rights for it. It's going to be a lot more difficult to do that, I think, for even 20 N64 games versus 20 Super Nintendo games.
Yeah, I mean, so my take on it is similar to PES.
You're not getting the rare games.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So right off the bat, a ton of the, you know, N64 games that everyone loves are the rare games. And a lot of those Banjo-Kazooies, GoldenEyes, most likely the Perfect Dark, those are probably all off the table. Two, I have to argue the controllers, at least in terms of replica controllers, they're about the same price as a decent replica SNES controller wholesale. If you wanted a really good one, maybe a little bit more expensive. But it's largely the fact that they can still command a price for N64 games, like Pat said. I don't think that they're... I think they realized with NES and Super Nintendo games, they were getting to the point where they just couldn't charge as much as they were for the ROMs, which is why we will see NES and Super Nintendo games as part of the Switch Online service. And that's why we saw them at what amounted to a reduced price packed in with the SNES Mini and the NES Mini. I think we will see an N64 Mini at some point, but I don't think it's going to roll off the line next year. I don't think this is going to be a
this
yearly
year. Might be a year after this year.
Yeah, 2019, 2020. You know, I mean, we'll see it, but I think they're going to squeeze some money out of the N64 games
before that. So they're releasing the NES class this year. Super Nintendo you can find regularly in stores now.
Yeah.
So they're going to...
On the 3DS, they were able to do Zelda Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time as $40 releases, you know, and people bought them. you know, at an alarming speed. So a lot of those games they could probably still do. You know, people are looking forward to, you know, hopefully a remake of, you know, something like Mario 64, not the DS version. And I bet you they could get at least 20 for that. So I don't think they're going to do a 64 that soon because of the value. And to the... And to answer his side question, like a PlayStation Mini, you know, one, it would be a matter of rights, but two, a lot of the popular games like that, I mean, you look at the Crash Bandicoot games, they just sold the collection of the first three for 40. That's over $10 a piece.
I don't think there's any sort of charm or reason to have a PlayStation 1 Mini. I don't think it'll exist.
I think there could be, but still it would require a lot of licensing. Plus
those games are a lot bigger. Obviously, you can put it still an SD card. You know what I mean? There's more complications for the emulation as well for a PlayStation.
No, there isn't. PlayStation emulation is the easiest thing in the world.
Well, I guess the BIOS it is. Or you need the BIOS to do it.
But Sony would put it on.
They would do it. But Sony would never do that. I don't think they'd ever do that.
Well, the only point I'm trying to make is those games are still two people worth a lot more monetarily. Okay. People are still paying more for PlayStation and 64 games in general.
I don't think you'll ever see a PlayStation Mini. I just don't.
I don't either. That's not the point, though. I'm just saying, like, those games are valued higher.
Okay. Thanks so much, Gizmo. Next question.
Hey there, Ian, Pat. What's happening?
Howdy.
You can't hear me.
A question that's been on my mind recently. Since we've had the release and success of Super Mario Maker on the Wii U and 3DS, where do you think the future of side-scrolling Mario games lie? Do you think it's over and done with? Do you think we're going to just get more new Super Mario Brothers games? Do you think we're just going to get a port of Super Mario Maker on the Switch? Or do you think we're going to get something completely new and revolutionary? I would love to hear your two thoughts on that. Thank you very much. Keep up the great work. Love the podcast. Oh, and by the way, this is Mitch calling from Bucks County, PA. Thanks, guys.
Good old Bucks County. Thanks, Mitch. So the question is, where's the future of the side-scrolling Mario games going? I think we absolutely will get a version of Mario Maker on the Switch. It'll sell like hotcakes.
Yeah, I think we will too. I think that's a guarantee. I was actually surprised that one wasn't announced for a port with the first wave of ports.
Maybe next year or later this year.
Especially with the closure of Miiverse, because that was a fairly decent part of that with the comments and the comments and the help bubbles you could leave and stuff like that. So I think that's a shoo-in. I think it was a great program. It came out as my interest in the Wii U for anything other than like Splatoon was starting to wane, so I didn't use it as much as I would have liked to. So I'm very much looking forward to that. As far as 2D Mario games go, I think it was kind of rumored, if not said, that Mario Maker was kind of put out to satisfy people's cravings for 2D Mario games. I don't think it was ever said that they weren't ever going to do another one again. I'm sure they will. But this frees them up from having to worry about that. It's not something they always have to be thinking about on the back burner. And I think that's good, because New Super Mario Bros. On the DS was pretty decent. New Super Mario Bros. 2 on the 3DS was phoned in. New Super Mario Bros. U on the Wii U was okay, but it seemed like they were losing their creative desire to kind of do these. So maybe they need a good long break from them. And yeah. I think Super Mario Maker is the right answer. If they want to take a break from doing 2D Marios, just let people have fun making their own for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they don't... You'll get a new one at some point.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's just... Will it be like, I don't know, go back to Yoshi's Island or something? I have no idea. Like, they can mine this whichever way they want to go. You can always have different playable characters. You can always have different new worlds. You don't have to stay in the Mushroom Kingdom. They might have to go a little off the beaten track in order to get it seem fresh again. But, you know, Nintendo can throw you a curveball and do something like that. Why not? I just think that, yeah, they realize that, hey, we just had Odyssey just comes out, gets all these acclaims, sells a billion copies. We're good. We're good. You're good with your Mario fix for a while.
Yeah.
You should be fine. There's been 1,000 Mario games. But you'll get one at some point. I just know when. You know, but obviously, absolutely, the Mario Maker on the Switch is an absolute no-brainer. Thanks so much, Mitch from Bucks County. All right, and we'll do one more this time. All right, this is a familiar face, or face, familiar voice at least, and face.
Hey, it's Eric from the Retail Archaeology Channel, and the question I had was I see you guys got a bunch of new fancy equipment, new mics, stuff like that. So I was curious if you guys could take a minute and talk about what that stuff is and maybe some of the other equipment and stuff that goes into making the podcast, just for some of us that are curious. Anyways, thanks a lot, guys, and keep up the great work on the podcast.
Why, thank you.
What goes into a podcast, Ian, besides angst and being overly emotional? What goes in? What do we got here, Ian? What do we got? We got a laptop. We got a mixer, which is dying, which is why you hear some little white noise here. We got a webcam, so you need a camera if you record it. Yeah, you have a computer to record audio-wise, and you have microphones. What are these? These are Shure SM7Bs. These are pretty much the standard for the industry. Like, these are like the top-of-the-line ones, but you don't have to get these. The Audio-Technica ones are pretty good.
Those are great.
Not as good as these, but they are good.
These are deeply sensual. These are smooth. Deeply,
yeah.
I like them.
But, yeah, that's all you need. Any sort of audio program, Audacity is free. You can record. You need a microphone.
These are swell webcams, too. What kind are these?
That's the Logitech C922X, I believe. That's the top-of-the-line one. Yeah.
Our laptops are probably more powerful than we need for this. But
for this, being that we're recording the video at the same time live, probably no. I mean, we drop some frames now and then. But if you're just doing audio, you don't need anything. You just need you can get a Blue Yeti USB mic for $50. You can get a netbook for $200, and you should be fine to record a podcast. And then you need to host it somewhere. There's various hosting platforms.
The mixer's a Behringer. I mean,
you don't need a Behringer, though. If it's just like one person, you can just get a USB mic, and you should be fine. We're fancy.
Yeah, sure.
We have inputs and stuff.
But Behringers, I mean, are
Behring
cheap.
Bears.
They're cheap.
As you can hear.
I wouldn't recommend them for like DJing or audio stuff. I wouldn't recommend like their audio equipment for higher end stuff, but for mixing or for like podcasting or for simple stuff, I mean, they do what they say on the tin for the price. So I actually would recommend them for lighter load work. I mean, this one lasted us for
3 years. We had it 3.5.
We've had it since the start of the podcast, I think.
No, we didn't have the very start?
I thought so. Well, I mean, like
5 years
a
ago?
Couple months in.
Was it? Okay. I don't remember.
It'll be 5 years in August.
God damn.
Let it take its time.
All right, we'll do one more question. We'll do one more. This is a shorter one. And I like the person.
All right.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Professor Dan Greenberg from Winter Iron Games.
Oh, hi, Dan. We
hope
like
you're enjoying the new digs at Castle Country.
Absolutely.
We're actually packing up for a mid-year move ourselves, and I wanted to ask. Any tips or suggestions for packing, storing, or shipping game collection safely? Thanks again for the CU podcast.
Gasoline and a match.
Cheers.
You cut off his tag. He's getting back to writing a certain Super Nintendo guidebook. Thanks so much, Daniel. And that's a professional fucking message right there. 19 seconds flat. Here's my name. Plug a book that's coming out. Good question. Okay. So how do you pack and ship games safely? Well, first off, don't move across the country. That could be bad. This time around, I used a combination of the Sterilite containers, and they're perfect for almost any video game. You can stack NES games, label up. You can do Genesis games, label up on the side if it's in the container. And they stack. They say you shouldn't do more than 3. I can do 4, you know, before the weight gets too much, and they're pretty safe. They sort of, you can see they sort of, you know, sort of clench into each other. Clench into each other. That's not a good term.
Mm-mm.
They carry each other well. Is that better?
Sure.
But, you know, a cardboard box is fine if it's a nice, you know, for the box consoles I put in cardboard boxes. You got to find big cardboard boxes, though, but they work fine. Just don't do too much. They get heavy. Those big rubber tubs are good for box consoles. You can usually fit a decent amount in there, and those are pretty safe and sturdy. They're not going to crush.
The only thing that drives me nuts about those is how they're not straight on the sides.
Sure, you're gonna, but then you have some wiggle room for.
You can pack. Yeah, you can put like nothing packing wrong with some material
curves on the those tubs. Nothing wrong with that. So, well, yeah, that's how you move a bunch of games. The other way you move a bunch of games is don't have a bunch of games. Have less stuff. That's yep. the other.
That's one of the main reasons why I got rid of a large my NES collection. Is absolutely. I didn't want to fucking move it again.
That's why you got me that Caltron manual. I'm not sure you didn't. Thanks for the question, Daniel. So if you want to ask a question, it's patreon.com/CU podcast. And Ian's going to perhaps do some writing starting this week. And we're going to give you guys more value, more better, gooder value for the Patreon.
Yeah, we are.
Thanks so much. And now we're going to go to the official Q&A time on the CU podcast. As I bring down the volume, Ian, Splatoon was the first Switch game in Japan to hit 2 million sales, not including digital, it sounds like. Wow.
Yeah.
That's from Nerd Tender.
Yeah, I think that's... I'm going to wait for you to drop that volume. Okay. I think that's insane.
In the membrane.
Wait, 2 million... First game to hit 2 million sales, how?
What do you mean, how? They sold them in stores. What do you mean?
Well, Zelda has to have hit more than...
Did it?
I don't know.
Let's look it up while you say... Okay, we presuppose that he's correct.
Yeah, but I feel like that's wrong. However, the sales that it has had in Japan, especially...
First game, according to sources.
Oh, okay. First game to hit 2 million sales in Japan.
In Japan. This decade. So the past 8 years? Wow.
Okay. That's crazy.
That's nuts. That's according to Metro Gaming. That's so a reputable site.
It's not only interesting because it's a unique game in and of itself in terms of how it plays, and it was taking some risks just based on its playstyle, but first-person shooters, well, it's not a first-person shooter, but third-person shooters, that's not exactly... I mean, from what I can gather, a particularly popular type of game in Japan. And I think what carries it and it makes it so accessible, not just in Japan, but everywhere with people who would maybe not necessarily play that type of game, is the aesthetic of it, the look, the art, the cartoony style.
Weird as hell.
Yeah. You know, the squid characters and all that, the weird Nickelodeon mixed with anime look, the Jet Set Radio sort of almost, you know, Shibuya back in the day sort of style. And I don't know, Nintendo hit that perfect mix.
Splatfest probably helped, right?
Splatfest probably helped too.
Having those events.
You know, the events and the competitions. And it was just this perfect mix of unique gameplay and style that really just kind of hit everyone. And most, not all, but most people I know who wouldn't normally consider themselves a fan of this style of game, who did buy it, ended up loving it. So that's crazy to me to hear that. But the fact that it's done so well is, I guess, when you think about it, not that surprising.
Well, it also tells you that Nintendo's reigning supreme in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Like, insanely so.
Yeah, back once again, you know.
So, I mean, it's done great here, but Nintendo really never, ever died out in Japan, you know, versus here.
Yeah,
it never got to the low point. Even when you say low point here, you still had strong 3DS sales, even when the Wii U was pretty bad.
That's strong. What I've always said. Even at their worst console wise, their portables always did just fine.
Yeah, I think it's a phenomenon. I know Splatoon is somewhat popular here, but you think about different cultures, then maybe it hits them a little bit harder than us. And yeah, like Ian says, it just touched upon a combination of factors that make it the biggest Switch game, which is kind of weird to think about, because here it's probably not in the top 3 or 4 here, right? It's probably a little down there. You know, you got the
I would say like
Mario Kart Deluxe, Zelda, Odyssey, Zelda, maybe fourth,
Probably fourth.
I mean, there hasn't been a huge amount of of games Apple, you know. So, all right. Interesting.
All right. This is from CJ Higgins at BloodOcean07. What do you imagine the lifespan of the Switch will be? 5 years? 10 years?
I think you'll be looking at easily 5 years. I think you're going to be looking at a combo system. This will replace the 3DS as it goes out over the next couple of years. It's already kind of headed in that direction. And I think you're going to be looking at a sort of iteration like you did with the DS. You're going to be seeing one or two upgrades during its life. I think you're going to have maybe not to the same extent of graphical differences between like the PS4 Pro versus the normal one. But I think you're going to get to the point where Nintendo is going to have to keep up with the PS5, which seems like it's going to be announced any day now, and whatever the new Xbox system is. And I think you're going to get something to sort of stay one step behind instead of two.
Right.
If that makes sense. So you can still extend out the generation. So you might get a mini Switch, maybe.
I still think that's a very likely thing.
But you're going to get a more powerful one. Technology gets cheaper. You'll be able to crunch more power inside a handheld eventually. And so maybe 3-4 years from now, you'll get something that comes closer to a PS4 in terms of graphical power inside a little handheld. It's not impossible.
Sure.
The way this stuff projects out, it's just keeping the heat at a reasonable level so you don't burn up your hands, you know, playing it. And yeah, I think due to this, I mean, when you look at the Switch, I think we're not close to knowing where it can go in terms of possibilities. That sounds cheesy, but I think it's the truth. I think it's just a matter of Nintendo deciding, okay, we have one unified platform that we can survive, and maybe we just slowly upgrade this. Every 3 years, we have a new version come out, and then you either get the new version with better graphics, or, you know, it's locked at, you know, 25 frames or 30 frames versus maybe handheld eventually 60 frames. I have no idea. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I think you're going to go in that direction though, where you're going to have, you know, different, the same way now on the Xbox and PlayStation, you're going to have, oh, this is kind of okay, but for the super version, you got to get the brand new one. Or, you know, because they're never going to have probably in console upgrades. You're not going to have your Switch Rumble Pack, probably. I don't see that happening. You have to buy a whole new one, probably. That's the way Nintendo probably want to do it.
It rumbles already.
I mean the expansion pack. I mean, it's for expansion.
Oh.
You're not going to get that for your Switch.
Yeah.
It's too complicated to like plug in something and get more graphical power.
Fair enough.
I don't see that. It'd be cute if they do that. But I think that we're going to start to see the potential of this with the Nintendo fucking learning thing that they're coming out with.
Labo.
I was thinking of Evo for some reason. Yeah, with Labo, I think that's going to be the first run of where can we take this? And that's not going to be where I think it's going to splinter off in that direction, but that's only going to get you so far. You're still going to need a more powerful console in like 3-4 years.
Yeah, I can see that. I think if I had to guess, I'm going to just state 7 years. Thereabouts.
7 years when the last game will be made.
Well, somewhere around there.
Which is roughly Super Nintendo.
The reason I'm using that is the 3DS just celebrated its 7-year anniversary just a few days ago. There's still a few more games to come out in the U.S. for the 3DS. They haven't officially announced any of them to be the last game, but, I mean, they probably will be. This will probably be the last year of the 3DS. So the 3DS will probably have had an 8-year lifespan. With this being both a portable and a home console, I agree with you also that this will probably be one of those Nintendo consoles. I mean, they've done it with the handhelds before, but it'll probably be one of the first times Nintendo with a home console does do an upgrade with better power. I imagine we'll get one with a screen that goes beyond 720.
Maybe 960
in handheld mode. But I think we may see something, you know, a successor announced before 7 years, possibly, or maybe at the 7-year mark. But I think they will support the Switch beyond whenever they announce something else, just like they did the 3DS. Just like the 3DS ended up being supported for longer than I think most people thought it would.
I think this is your Nintendo console, though, this format for the next 20 years.
Oh, sure.
I don't think they're going to go back to
this has proven to be console. This has proven to be too successful
already.
Yeah.
This is going to be the way to distinguish themselves from the competition.
Just don't fucking call the next one Switch U.
Yes. They learned a tough fucking lesson the other day. But I think this is what you're going to have for Nintendo going forward.
Don't get fucking cute with your naming conventions.
Don't make a fucking maniac out of us. I think you're going to have it be the lesser powerful but portable version. And of course, you might have a portable Xbox or PlayStation down the line. They might try to do it. But I think Nintendo hit upon something that no one thought would hit this sweet spot as well as it did. Well, you can play, Wolfenstein. It's not going to look as good as the console, but who cares? Because you can play it walking around your house in your underwear.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned it here, or I've at least mentioned it to friends. For all the talk about versatility, I don't think anyone really cared about it or realized what a game changer that would be until people had it in their hands and had a month to use it and realize how cool that versatility was.
They warned us, all those hipster rooftop parties, they warned us. They knew that, and that's how people are using it, kind of. All right. This is from at Keeping Up Gaming. Any tips, Ian, for just starting out a podcast?
Find someone you like just enough.
And when that can't happen here, what do we do? How do we do it?
I don't know. I mean, I think with
I think.
I don't know. We did this by accident.
No, it was planned.
Well, it was, but I mean, we got this far by accident.
I wouldn't call it accident, Ian. There's some hard work that got
put into it. I know there is, but I mean, we take
exception to that.
I don't mean it like that. I don't know. It like ours worked because it worked. We have good chemistry, and I think the chemistry is the biggest factor. And you don't really know if you have that good of a chemistry with a co-host necessarily until you've done a few of them.
Yeah, I think, well, we have very peculiar personalities in general.
Sure.
Separate.
Yes.
I think when you put our personalities together, it's a strange cocktail of a little bit of weirdness, a little bit of absurdity at times, but it's you can't replicate a dynamic that dynamics are always different. So you and your friend have a dynamic that's unique to yours, and it can be good. It also cannot be good enough to do a podcast. Just because you have a friend or someone that you can converse with about a topic that you agree on, and usually agreement's not good for a podcast necessarily when you come at things the same way. When you agree on something, you usually come out at even a different angle in order to make it interesting. But you have to be able to make something interesting, which I'm failing to right now on this topic. but my advice for just starting out is this. It has to be fun to you. You can't force it. You got to talk about things you want to talk about, whatever. If it's music, which to me is the worst thing to talk about in a podcast, just because it's harder to break away to the example. It's harder to describe songs as you would describe a video game or a movie or a TV show. It's a lot more difficult. This is my opinion. I think it is. Then again, what the fuck do I know? But be consistent if you're doing a podcast. As much as you, it's tough. Consistency when you're doing it, not just for any potential audience, but for yourself to be disciplined enough to do it. If you do something and you're going to pick a time, stick to it, and that's your time to do it, whether it's every Saturday, you know, every Tuesday, whatever.
I also feel like consistency among topics is important. I feel like, there's a lot of podcasts out there that, you know, people starting out and they use their first, you know, five episodes or something like that to try to...
Something squeaky.
Oh. They use like their first five topic or episodes or something to try to figure out what topics they want to land on. And you really should nail that down first, because you'll lose people if, you know, they think you're talking about, are you a video game podcast? Then, okay, no, now it's a wrestling podcast. Okay, now it's a movie podcast. If those are the things you want to cover, then try to hit on each of those every episode instead of jumping around, because you'll never find a fan base.
Sure. But then, yeah, I think there's two ways to do it. You can establish a theme people like there's specific podcasts just for one game. So it's like a Destiny podcast.
Sure.
My pal Destin does a Destiny podcast, which I never get over. Destiny at IGN. So you know people that like Destiny are going to tune in for that no matter what.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. Whether you do a broad range of topics like we do or you focus in on one, just try to make sure that that's what you're doing from the start.
Sure. So you either have a consistent topic. It's a wrestling topic. It's always wrestling. Otherwise, it helps to have some sort of following. Fortunately, before the podcast started, I was on YouTube for like 5 years, so that helped.
Right.
There was something that, okay, people knew me. They can try to listen to. So I wasn't totally starting from scratch. So that's not actually advice to how you start out, but be consistent, have fun, don't force things, and let, you know, when a topic is petering out, like right now, you let it die. You let it, you kick it to the curb and you move on.
You move on.
Okay.
And our last one, Ian asks.
God damn it.
This is from Steve Kennedy at SteveTrex42. Collectors thinking museums will want their games.
Are they? We debated answering this one because you thought it was like a straw man. I don't know. I think there's some collectors that actually believe that
okay.
A museum will want their specific collection. And when you talk about museums, the one that was going for like everything is like the museum, the Straw Museum, right?
Right.
They want like one of everything for the most part. Just to have a copy of it, which I guess is a noble instinct or ambition to have, like Library of Congress, to have, you know, one of every book potentially, or they choose movies every year that get put into the vault in case there's a nuclear fallout or explosion. I think the difference with video game media is that due to emulation and ROMs and the storage capacities, I think the physical aspect of the actual games themselves over the generations will become less and less. So if a museum is going to put it on a display piece, say 100 years from now on the NES, they won't need 750 games. They'll need 5 or 10 or 20 and have them out on a display. This is how people played games in the late 80s, and show that. And people walking around in their little visors with their chip implants, they'll be able to be like, oh, that's how people before they destroyed themselves because they didn't care about the environment, that's how they play video games with their ugly gray cartridges. But they won't need to have a copy of Chubby Cherub laying around 200 years from now necessarily.
Need to? No. But
Could they? Sure. No one's going to want to look at that. Like, it's almost like, do you need to, like, when you think about the history of media going back, when you think about, okay, people are going to... Is someone going to need every single fucking record that ever existed in a museum eventually? Is that going to be a need to have that?
No.
Versus just having those recordings somewhere down for we can listen to. Go and right. Listen to them. Oh, you know, I'm really looking at a future where you're going to have, like, you walk into a video game museum and you're going to have displays out. And maybe you'll have a catalog. You can just say, oh, I want to play a Sega Master System game. And you bring up all the menu of the games and you play it. And that'll be good enough. And you'll have a display of the Master System games. I can be totally wrong, but just based upon a curated, when you think about curation of museum displays, it's almost never every single one of something. It's a sure. particular set of something
no,
that's a good example of the time period. And this is what it was.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's in my opinion, what it's going to be. Plus, I mean, how many museums are going to exist to want to have complete collections of something versus just having some pieces of it? You know, are we going to have a museum of natural history? You know, you have a museum of natural history almost in every major city, most of them, a decent amount. Are you going to have a museum of video games in every major city? I don't know. Maybe eventually, or maybe it'll just be like a general entertainment museum of the, you know, 20th century entertainment, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I could see one video game museum going for, you know, a full of everything as archival. But yeah, I mean, if you have multiple video game museums, I totally see it being, you know, your way. A display, maybe an original system you can play on for kicks.
Yeah.
And
put it behind an acrylic case so you have the controllers that'll be greased up by then and Cheetoed, or we'll figure out the Cheeto slime in the year 20 87. We'll figure out Cheetos with no residue. That'll be the biggest thing.
Yeah.
In the next 30 years when we're dying. That'll be like, oh, we figured it out. We didn't cure cancer. We have Cheetos now without orangey fingertips.
There's no way they'd taste nearly as good.
You don't think so?
No.
With that residue? The cheese just clings to that. What's the Cheeto form called? What is that called? That little crusty stick thing.
Crunchy.
It's just a crunchy?
It's a crunchy.
Is that what it's called? What the fuck was I talking about? This is a bizarre podcast.
We're done.
Castle Country's produced some strange podcasts, but I like them. They're kind of like a weird energy here.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that weird energy?
I do.
I'm serious.
I do.
It's because Donkey Kong's been staring at me the whole time behind you. But this has been an interesting CU podcast for sure. But collectors thinking museums will want their games. They'll want like 2% of their games. You know, they're gonna trash their Atari Lynx games and NGPC. games.
No, they won't.
He'll have the Neo Geo Pocket Color Museum.
Yes.
They'll charge admission to that. It'll be his living room. Just walk in, you see a little display case of all the games. You can play for 5 minutes, and then your Cheeto-stained fingers will slap the Platinum Edition console away, or fucking they have a Platinum one. I don't know where I'm going with this. I don't know where I'm going. So, Ian, this was a CU podcast.
For Patrick Contry.
No, we're not done exactly yet. You got to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, you know, wherever you listen to us. Or on YouTube. We got a Patreon, patreon.com/CU Podcast. If you want to advertise with us, you can get in touch with one of us on Twitter or email, or you can email CU Podcast@thepunkeffect.com.
Reach out
and touch
and
us.
And I will reach back.
And I'm not sure what that motion is here. It's
me,
like
it's reaching back.
And see, is that what? So I got to drop Ian off because he doesn't want to lift home from here. Plus, I got to pick up some fast food on the way home. And I got to call back someone who called me during the podcast. That's only ever happened like that.
And before. You got to get a pop-up table out of my apartment.
Oh, okay. It's not a pop-up table. It's a
card table.
Card table.
That pop-up. Pops up.
It's a pop-up.
Well, it's a folding table.
It's a folding table, Ian. It doesn't like it's like a book. You open it up and it comes to life. All right, Ian. Get the hell out of my place.
We're done.
No, I mean, well... Ian, by the way, Ian walked into my place with that, like...
I knocked, and I thought I heard you say come
no.
in, but it turns out it was Shane McMahon.
It was Shane McMahon or Daniel Bryan on the TV. All right, see you later.